Oh, I forgot I'm hosting this one.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we're talking about the Minnesota Fringe Festival. We were all in a bunch of different shows and involved in different things here and there, and we're going to talk about it, and goddammit, you're going to listen.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Hi, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Molly Glover.
Hello.
And Tim Wick.
Hello, I am also joining in.
Adjoining.
I'm joining.
We're joined.
We're adjunct co-hosts.
No, it's like carpentry. He's joining.
He's a joiner. Yeah.
Yes.
He puts two pieces of wood together.
He's like two knees. He's jointing.
Right. Yeah. Oh.
Oh, God.
Right.
Now we're done. We're done.
That was our whole episode.
Bye. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter.
No, actually, we were going to talk about Patreon.
All right. Anyway.
We were going to talk about the Minnesota Fringe Festival, which just ended.
Yay!
We're recording a few days after, and... we've done episodes in the past about shows at the Fringe Festival, Fringe Boners.
We've had the executive director of the Minnesota Fringe on our podcast.
Absolutely. And this year, things are a little different because Molly and I were involved in the Fringe Festival. And
for the first time.
Tim, you did some new things that you haven't done in the Fringe Festival before as well.
True.
Which means not dancing because you've done that already.
I've done the dancing thing. Thank goodness that's done.
What did you do this year that was new?
I was in a storytelling show, which is weird for me. I've written a lot for the Fringe, and I had a show that I wrote, but I got asked to be a part of a show called The Not So Silent Planet, which is a speculative fiction storytelling show. So I was asked to write a science fiction story and present it as 1/3 of that show, which was really...
Speculative fiction is fancy talk for science fiction.
Fancy talk for science fiction, fantasy, and supernatural horror.
Exactly, because post-apocalyptic can be speculative fiction.
Anything, as our director and the curator of the show says, Philip Andrew Bendit-Low said, anything where the physics of a particular place operate in a way that is somewhat different from our own, is how he defined speculative fiction. Even though there are some people who believe in ghosts, a ghost story would still be considered speculative fiction because it does operate outside of the laws of physics as we certainly understand them right now.
Who else was in that with you?
There was Gary Simone Hoover, who you probably don't know. He's sort of an improvisational storyteller. He tells kind of weird sort of existential stuff. That was very interesting. Nothing like what I write.
Did he improvise this, or did he write for this?
What he does is he has specific beats that he wants to hit, even specific lines that he wants to hit. But the parts that are between those kind of change and evolve. So his story changed and evolved a lot throughout the festival.
Was that more interesting for you being in the show, like having to hear the same thing over and over, having there be some changes? Or was it harder?
It was actually, it didn't matter. And I'll explain why in a minute. And then Pat Harrigan, who we definitely need to get onto the show at some point. He runs a podcast called, or he's part of a podcast called Get Off My World, which is a Doctor Who podcast. And he's an atheist.
Kelvin, right?
Mm-hmm.
We talked about this a little bit, and he's an atheist, so we got to get him on the podcast. But he writes really cool kind of Lovecraftian horror stuff. Really fascinating, atmospheric, just his description of place and time, and really well done. And then he did a horror story, and Gary's story was technically supposed to be fantasy, although it was, it's hard to explain. I mean, I guess we'll call it fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And my story was science, very hard science fiction. And I challenged myself in a lot of ways, one of which was I wanted to have the whole thing memorized. Usually, storytelling shows, storytellers read off a script.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this was a 15-minute monologue, essentially. It was broken into three, so 3 5-minute monologues.
Still, though.
It's a lot to remember. Mm-hmm. But I just felt that the presentation would be better if it was memorized. So I busted my ass for 2 weeks memorizing the whole goddamn thing.
That's awesome. Good for you.
And yeah, it was a serious story. It was not comedy. I write comedy, but the story that I wrote did not make sense as a comedy. So it was pretty serious, and I got a lot of really great feedback on it. The feedback on the show was mediocre, but the feedback on my specific part of it was almost universally positive. And I feel bad for the other performers because I thought they did a very good job, but their stuff was different. And I think the major difference was, as somebody who's been in theater most of my life, I created a story that could be presented in a theatrical fashion.
Sure.
So I tend, because I'm a playwright, my fiction tends to involve a lot more conversations. That most of the exposition, most of what happens in the story that's important comes out through dialogue, mm-hmm. because that's what I'm used to. I'm used to writing dialogue. So I wrote something that had a lot of dialogue, and I had another actor, because the character was a single person on a spaceship and she was having a conversation with the computer on the spaceship, and I wanted to have that computer be a different voice. I had another actress playing the voice of the computer from off stage. So there were a lot of things, and I was really cognizant of what I wanted to do with the light, and I wanted to have these pools of light that I could move into and out of, because I felt it made it feel a little more like I was on a spaceship. So I did a lot of things that were very definitely a product of my experience in theater.
I wish our timing hadn't, of our show overlaps made. The worst part for me, I think, with The Fringe is you never get to see everything you want to see.
It's true.
Especially if you're performing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are 156 shows. Yeah. There are, with the encore, I believe it's 57 slots.
Yeah.
And I was performing in or had written a show that I wanted to see in 13 of those slots. I missed 3 slots over the course of the festival this year that I wasn't in a show or watching a show, which was insane and dumb, and I don't recommend it.
Yeah.
But sounds overwhelming.
It got to the point where I usually take a night off, mm-hmm. but the night that I was going to take off, I went and looked at the schedule, and there were like 4 shows that I really wanted to see that were perfectly lined up so I could get to every one of them that night, and I was like, shit, I guess.
Yeah. We took it easy our first year, for sure. Like, we definitely tried not to get too overwhelmed, but so we didn't want to burn out, so that next year we're like, I don't want to do it. It was too much.
Yeah. Oh, and, I mean, what I did, I will try not to do again. I don't regret seeing the shows I saw or participating in the shows I participated in, but it was a pretty rough year. And the other thing I did I was part of a show curated by Wendy Bowlesby, and I wrote a couple of things for that.
Variieties show, right?
It was a variety show, and I don't think that it was Paul really. Luke. I don't think it was. It was an interesting show. Everything in it was good. I'm not sure it totally went together mm-hmm. as nicely as it could, because it was kind of like, well, here's my concept of the show. Go out and produce something.
Yeah.
And she lives in Austin, so it wasn't like Texas. You guys had rehearsals or could and have that was directorial part of
the,
notes.
That was part of the idea was. So, you know, she curated the show from Texas, and we came in and we put it together. And, you know, I thought everybody's pieces were really good, but there's a certain amount of, you know, the name of the show was Disconnect, and it was actually a good name because there was a certain amount of disconnect because of how the show was put together.
I saw it, and I was like, I don't know how you would make a show better than that while staying true to the concept and being, like, what the show is meant to be. Like, mm-hmm. it's supposed to be a little disconnected. It's supposed to be not, like, super polished in a specific way because of what the... I don't know.
Or at least that's the idea that you got from the presentation?
I liked a lot of... It had funny moments. It had parts that were really, really sad.
Did we do choose your own interpretation the night you were there? Was that
okay? Yeah, where you play telephone with
really weird. It's really, really super silly comedy sketch. In it about misinterpreting texts.
Did you write the one you did with the text message one where it was like a choose your own text message?
Yeah, that's the one I wrote. That.
Okay, yeah,
I wrote that's,
that. I thought you were talking about the. Game of telephone played.
That was the improv thing, and I was in that some nights.
Yeah.
And that was Cole put that together. The other thing that I was part of was the opening monologue, which was a really interesting project, which was Wendy basically said, here's what I want to say in my opening monologue, and then handed off to me and two other people to write the opening monologue. And then she took them all and put them together using our different voices at different times. And that was
interesting.
It was really, it was fascinating because she gave all of us the same information and the three of us came up with dramatically different.
They're all handing her different parts of her monologue as she's going, walking on and off stage, like, so we can, it's kind of obvious when the narrative voice is changing or which parts are changing, even though they're kind of like cobbled together at very distinct good points to, at least from what it seemed as the audience. Mm-hmm. Was that what happened?
Yeah, we all wrote it, and then Wendy took it all and figured out how to put everybody's voices together into one cohesive opening.
That's super cool.
Yeah, that wasn't the challenge that Not So Silent Planet was. But anyway, enough about me. I did a lot. I also wrote a show called And to Think That I Saw It at 221B Baker Street, which was a mashup of Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Seuss. And it was very silly and fun, and it was exactly the kind of show that I like to write. So
it was super silly and fun.
It was very silly, yeah.
I liked all the things, especially, were kind of my favorite part.
I was so disappointed that not enough, because the things are getting more and more bizarre, and at the end it's thing, it starts with thing 3 and 4, and then 5 and 6, Frank and Bob, and then the last two are Toaster Oven and Mixie Spitlick, and I never got very many laughs when you found out the last thing's name was Mixie Spitlick, but I was proud of it.
I think it would have been better. I couldn't read them. They weren't,
the writing was super small.
It was super small, and even though I knew what they were from beta reading the script, I was like, oh man, like that is really hard. And we were in the way back, obviously. Yes, we sat in the very back, so that made it tricky.
But I wrote it into the script so that it got said out loud, and I was hoping that I'd get the laughs from a couple of nerds, and I did. But not, it's to me, it's like I always say that my favorite jokes are the ones that don't get laughs, because
you are for you.
Because I like certain jokes that they entertain and they never entertain other people. that's okay.
I have stuff like that. That's a for me joke.
Yeah,
totally.
Molly, you were in Eric Thompson did a Fringe show for the first time.
Yep, directed Double Blind Productions did the improv voice. However, it sounds like an Irish guy saying improvise. The improvise.
What's your plan? No plan. I'm going to improvise.
Yep. Right. The improvise is an improvised singing competition like The Voice or American Idol. We had our structure. Well, there were four contestants: me, Lauren Haven, Jeff Gillen, who. Jeff's girlfriend Shay has actually will be on our show in later weeks. And then Aaron Cook. And Aaron Cook is in a group called the Pickup Artists, which is an a cappella improv singing group. And Jeff does.
Oh my God, those guys!
Jeff does
a lot of great group.
Jeff does tons of improv. He's in Squash Banana. I know he does singing stuff too. Yeah. He's a great singer. Lauren and I haven't done singing improv really so much, but like we both had a great time. Lauren can sing opera. It is crazy. Like she busted some out on Saturday or Sunday. Sunday, I think, and on our last show, and it's insane. But so the format is, we don't know what prize we're playing for or any of our song topics are going to be. And so we have the audience write all that stuff down ahead of time. So we're just drawing slips, not really getting suggestions during the show. And so then the prizes that we played for, a very special jar of honey.
I saw that one.
That show.
We competed for our freedom. We competed for...
That's dark.
Yep, it was. It was a dark show. Two orphans, a 16-year-old girl who hated her parents, and I wanted a divorce. So, like, it was super dark.
Yeah.
We competed for $10,000. We competed for a trip to Ireland. And then we competed... Or the last one was A Night with Benedict Cumberbatch. And coincidentally, before we found out what the prize was, we had decided that our final show would be Accent Day, and we would all do accents. And so we had English, Irish, Jersey, and vaguely Russian Slavic, and it was very fun. it was a really great show, and my only, the only like bit of oh man like that I had was oh man, other people are doing scripted stuff, and I love acting, and I haven't gotten to act in a really long time because I don't really have the time to actually like audition for actual plays and stuff because I'm doing so much other comedy and working and things, but like that is something that I want to do.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you, the advice that I'll give you for Fringe is like when Fringe, like when people right after the lottery say, hey, if anybody's looking for somebody to be in their show, you know, you will get people that will be like, because anybody who knows Fringe knows what you have to do is lock down your actors within like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Seriously. Of knowing your ping pong ball is drawn. It's like, find your actors, because everybody in the Twin Cities who is has a Fringe show is now going out to find actors for their show.
Yep.
And so the sooner you get, we had a real problem because we didn't figure out we were going to do Baker Street. We had a different idea, and I locked in on Baker Street about a month and a half after we really should have locked in on an idea. So finding actors was more of a challenge. I'd already talked to Don Krasnowski about being in a show. So fortunately, she had already committed to being in our show.
That is fortunate.
Because it meant that I had a lead. But but after that, we ended up with a great cast. And I don't want to say, oh, fuck, we had terrible.
Yeah.
We know we had great people. But it becomes much harder the further you get. So if you go out there right away and say, hey, I'd love to do a show, then you can get that.
Yeah, actually, Nick and I actually, we're definitely putting in for something. We've been writing a things that we're excited to try to do.
Cool.
But also, like, I mean, obviously, if we don't get drawn, that's good advice.
Well, we don't have to do casting because we think we're going to keep it to two.
Yeah, I really like the idea of doing something scripted and acting. I haven't, most people who know me in theater these days have never actually seen me act. So that's kind of amazing. Like, there was a time where that was not the case.
I hadn't done something scripted other than a short comedy thing I wrote for a Ville variety show. I haven't done anything scripted in like 13 years.
But so just to finish real quick, so I did the improv voice and it was really well. We had great ratings. We had really good houses. We were at the Southern, so it was pretty hard to sell out. I mean, it's a really, really big audience. You know, I think there's something
house.
200 seats or something. It's
like perfect theater for it, though.
It is. It was a perfect theater for us. But then I also, I wrote the what ended up being the opening monologue for The Abortion Chronicles, which I was super proud of. And just really
Ariel Leaf, who's with, been on the show.
Yep, Red Letter Productions did that one, and it was just great. I hadn't, not since writing one acts in high school, had I written something that I've gotten to see put on, that other than like radio play stuff, you know. So like this was really cool to see. I hadn't been in the rehearsals. I hadn't seen anything. I had no idea how they were going to do it until I just was in the audience and got to see it like that. So it was really cool. I really had a good time writing that. And I was really honored to be included in that.
You're really proud of it.
It was great.
Yeah, it was a strong show.
Yeah, it was. I was really impressed with the show on a whole.
It was basically a series of stories about abortion.
Yep, from all sides.
And your monologue was a really nice opener because it was written from the perspective of somebody who'd worked in an abortion clinic and talks about how everybody's story is different, but how important abortion is as something that needs to be available and legal. And that was lovely because it leads into all these stories from women.
Lots of stories, one reason. I'm pregnant and I can't be.
Yeah.
And
it was nicely done.
Thank you.
That.
Thank you very much. So
I mean, I know you didn't write it to be the opener, but it was a great...
I just wrote it.
It was a great piece that...
Ariel was like, when we read it, we were like, oh shit, we found the opening. Like, this is exactly what we need. Like, I would have performed it myself, but we had overlap of two nights and they didn't want to have a sub for those two nights, which I totally understand. And I was like, that's fine. If there hadn't been any overlap, I would have done that one too, which would have been really fun. But it was still really good.
Yeah, I would have taken a role in Baker Street if it hadn't overlapped with Disconnect on two nights.
Yep. Nick,
yo.
This was your... So you were very nervous about this show.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I will tell you guys, Nick was very concerned about being able to memorize lines and act, and he's like, I'm going to be with Kelvin and Dawn and Lana, who are all like... You know, they have all acted in Fringe before.
Yep.
They've all been in a lot of plays recently.
Kelvin has done a number of one-man plays. Kelvin Hatley, a friend of the show. He's done a number of one-man plays, and this year he went out of his comfort zone and wrote for four. And so he wrote a kind of a workplace comedy supernatural thing called...
It's like workplace set in hell.
Yeah, Damned If You Do.
It was really funny.
I had so much fun doing it, and I had, it felt really good, and it felt like I got to be funny and do my thing, and I didn't screw up anything.
You didn't screw up anything.
I didn't forget any lines or anything, like, for any of the performances. Like,
I think, you know, and I thought you did a really great job. And I think, you know, Molly, too, we didn't get to say
thank
that.
Thank
you. But, I mean, in a totally different thing. But anyway, both with your speech and with the improvisation, because improvisational music is hard. And I do improvisational. I mean, that's one of the things that with the drags I do all the fucking time.
Yeah.
And so I know how fucking hard it is.
Yeah, especially when you don't control the music, when someone else is doing the music, and you just have to, like, Chad Dutton was our musician, and we were just along for the ride.
Yeah.
So
Kelvin, I mean, and he typecast a little bit. He wrote to his actors, which is great.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you can have a role written to you and still blow it.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I thought was great is that, you know, yeah, he cast you really well, and then you totally nailed it.
Yeah, you really made that part your own, because, like, there weren't a lot of... Kelvin doesn't really write any emotion or stage direction in his pieces. I was running lines with you.
Yeah.
It's just the lines. It's never, like, you know, worriedly or quiet or sighs or anything like that. Like, it was a lot of, like, it was written, and he kind of gave you that interpretation to do with it as you wished.
He's pretty hands off directorially too. Like, he kind of, like, let me do my own thing and didn't really. He like one or two very general lines about what he thought of the character. And then was just kind of like, I just kind of did my own thing. And every once in a while, I'd be like, I did a thing there. Was that all right? Like, that felt like a thing to do. And he'd be like, yeah, sure, whatever. Yeah. So it was just kind of...
Oh, yeah.
it was very weird because I didn't... Not that I'm, like, super needy or anything, but not having done any memorization in so long or any, like scripted acting, I felt like I didn't feel, like, needy, like I needed validation, but at the same time, like it had been so long that I needed some firm, like, I needed a little validation. Maybe that's just what it comes down to, is, like, is this good? Is this all right?
And you guys got great reviews, too,
We got great reviews. We got, like, medium reviews. We didn't get any, like, bad reviews.
Yeah.
But
this year is the first year for a show that I've written that I didn't get anything below a 3.
That's great.
We
didn't either. We didn't get anything below a 3.
Baker Street had 1 3 and everything else was 4s and 5s.
Yeah, we had 2 3s. One of them said that I guess I was just expecting something more like Whose Line Is It Anyway? And it's like, so you were expecting the professional, like, pinnacle of something
we're not doing.
And then
I went to McDonald's. I was expecting, like, a really good burger.
We got for Not So Silent Plan, we got a 2-star that was like, well, this show just isn't my kind of show. Then I'm like, don't fucking review it, asshole.
Exactly.
If it's not your kind of show, then don't tell us it sucked.
I saw in reviews, like, my name got mentioned a couple times in positive ways, mm-hmm. which felt really great, really validating. I totally copied them all and put them in a little Word file to keep for myself.
I like that.
It's nice. It's nice to have the validation.
Yeah. It felt good.
There were a couple of reviews. The reviews for Not So Silent Planet were mixed, and it's a storytelling show. So So that's nice. That's understandable. There were a couple of reviews that were like 2 stars that were like, if it had just been my story, they would have given us 5.
And
that blows for the other performers, and I feel bad, but at the same time, it was personally very validating.
It's funny, because everyone was like, oh, don't read the reviews, and I was like, the thing is, though, you, or they're like, oh, don't listen to the negative reviews, like, but the thing is, then you can't, then, if someone says, don't listen to or don't read the negative reviews, then you should also not be listening to or reading the positive reviews. You can't say, I'm only going to accept praise and not listen to any criticism about my theatrical work. That's just fucking not how it works. So take everything with a grain of salt.
It is difficult.
I love that they,
like, let Aaron 5-star Kennedy. I was teasing Aaron so bad, because every show she saw, she gave 5 stars because she's just so happy they did it. And she just loved it. And her friends were in it, and they were so, everyone worked so hard. And it's like,
I always look at a person's other reviews, which I love. You can be like, Like, we got a 4 from this person, and they didn't give anyone a 5, and they gave mostly 3s and 2s, so I feel like that's a pretty awesome 4.
Yeah.
And then you get a 5 from someone that's rated like, everything 5.
They've rated
5.
30 shows, and they all got 5 stars. Like, you're like, I'm really? Like, all of them?
Cool, I'm glad they have
every
fun
show
at the
Fringe. Every show was the perfect epitome of what you'd expect to see.
Yeah, I like that you can wait. You can kind of weight their reviews by reading other stuff.
And I will admit, a bad review, like Top Gun a couple of years ago was a crazy success. We sold out a couple of shows. We got the encore. It was mostly positive reviews. And we got like a couple of 1 and 2 star reviews.
It was so fucking funny though. And so well done and polished.
And I appreciated all of that. But I admit, a bad review just wrecks me. I'm like, ah, fuck. I couldn't make everybody love this show.
No, you know? I get that.
Or I'm like, because the 1 3-star review came from somebody I know. I don't think they listen to this podcast, but it doesn't really matter. So the 1 3-star review came from somebody I know. It criticized specific things about the writing that I 100% disagreed with, because it's like, Dr. Seuss should be this way and Sherlock Holmes should be this way, and I didn't get that from this show. And I'm like, fuck you. I wrote that shit in exactly. You have no idea how much fucking research I did on both of these topics. And it's like, god damn it. How can you not see that? But the real reason it pissed me off is because, and I know we got to go to 5 questions, but the thing is, I mentored this guy who was one of the people that was sponsored by Fearless, a show called Liver, which was terrible.
Oh.
And I did the best I could.
Yeah.
And I told him, because he's this super flighty guy, and he was, and you know, we sat down and talked about his show, and he talks a mile a minute, and he's like 5 different directions at once. And I was like, dude, you need a director.
Mm-hmm.
You need somebody to take all this crap that you've got and to focus you.
Yeah.
And he didn't get a director, and it was the most scattershot, just bad show.
Yeah.
It was a bad show. And the dude who reviewed my show and gave it 3 stars gave Liver 3 stars. And I was like, fuck you.
Ah.
My show is way better than that show.
So, real quick, we won't like go super deep on it. What was a favorite show that you saw and why? Tim?
Okay. Not going to include my shows.
Right. Obviously.
Yeah.
Yep.
The best show I saw, which, you guys, I don't even know how to describe it. It was so amazing. Fruit Flies Like a Banana.
Oh, I heard that from a lot of people.
And it's 3, and I got to know them during the Fringe. They came and saw my show and they loved it. So it was like, hooray, these amazing people love my show. But anyway, they are 3 musicians, a trombone player, a flautist, and a percussionist. And what they do is a combination of absolutely amazing music and dance and acrobatics and comedy. So they will do things like, they did a piece that was, the name of the piece was Hannah, and it was a palindrome where the music is the same forward and backwards.
Mm-hmm.
It goes halfway through.
Yeah.
And they did a dance number where they're all moving while playing their instruments.
Oh, wow.
And the dance number itself is a palindrome.
Wow.
So they get halfway through and then they go back.
That's awesome.
So the dance and the music is the same forward and back. And that's just one of the things they did. Their show is the alphabet show. So they had the audience picking each letter of the alphabet, and they had a different thing for every letter of the alphabet.
That's awesome.
And they managed in an hour to just get through every single letter of the alphabet.
Wow.
Oh my god, they're so good. If they get into the festival next year, just fucking go see them.
Awesome. I would say Caucasian Aggressive Pandas, because I didn't get to see it before.
Yeah.
And I had only read the script. I did a proofread and helped Duck with some just minor, you know, word choices and typography things. And so, like, I was super excited to see it performed. I think it blew me away. It was, my test of watching a Fringe show is if I look at my watch, and I didn't look at my watch once the whole show. I was just super, super thrilled the whole time and
really
enjoyed it. And it's the only show I can say that I didn't look at my watch once during. So it was great.
It was a really good show.
I'm torn, and I want to like give a shout out to Tim Urenz, Rats in the Walls, but like Longosaurus Rex show with Longosaurus Rex featuring Longosaurus Rex, which Tom Reed
Tom Reed
is was a one-man improv lounge with a
it was a little like improvising.
It made me want to do it. It made me want, as soon as I saw it, I was like, I could fucking do this. I could improv MC like this shit. This looks like, I just, that's to me when a show is really good, is when I'm like, oh my god, I want to be in this. Like, I want to be doing this too.
That was fantastic. Good. His little like fake costume change like little intermission joke, and the guy doing the music was super talented,
super good.
I laughed really hard at that, and I felt like an hour one man show was like a 20 minute show.
So
we'll be back
show.
I know Tim you'll be back, but
I hope so.
I mean, you'll be back.
We're gonna put in, that's for sure.
Yeah. So on that note, we fringed. It was awesome.
We did.
Let's get some answers from someone. Who do we have?
We have 5 answers from Heather Alicia Taylor, a recent fan from Tucson, Arizona.
Hooray, cool. Tucson. I love Tucson. All right, question number 1. What's a movie you'll stop and watch anytime it's on?
The movie I will stop and watch whenever it's on is Ever After.
Ever After.
I know it's cheesy, but there's something about it that makes me love it. I've even been known to watch it in Spanish. That's awesome.
No, that's Ever great. After is a wonderful little movie.
It's Drew Barrymore, like Cinderella right?
Drew Barrymore, Cinderella.
Yeah,
oh, right. Yeah, that wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
Question number 2. What is your geekiest or most prized possession?
My geekiest possession is probably my collection of action figures, which includes several Doctor Who, Star Trek, and even Disney figures.
Yay.
That's awesome.
That's great.
I wonder if they're in the boxes or not. I'll have to. Mm-hmm. Heather, you got to write in and tell us if you keep them in the packaging or not. I'm very excited to know.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Question number 3. What supernatural or mythical being do you wish was real?
The supernatural being I would bring into existence is a Chinese lion dog. Honestly, who doesn't want to see a 300-pound shih tzu?
I'm down.
It sounds kind of amazing. I'm not. Yeah. Chinese lion dogs with their magical bark powers and stuff.
Yeah,
like, don't they grant wishes?
I don't know. That's
who even cares? It's a lion dog.
That's why supposedly why shih tzus are so small is they're like bred smaller and smaller and smaller to smuggle them out.
Sure.
To be able to like steal them because only royalty were allowed to have them or something. I don't know if that's true or not. That could be. Honky bull. I don't know. It sounds kind of...
White people nonsense ahead.
Maybe. Question number 4. Say religion is gone. What is the biggest problem now facing humanity?
The biggest problem facing humanity after religion is gone will be a sudden lack of community for those who relied on a church community.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about that. Yeah. I think that's the biggest thing that atheists who have come out of a church community miss is that sense of community.
Yeah, it would be interesting. I mean, if it was just, it depends. Like, is it gone because it had a rate of attrition and it's finally gone and now we still have problems? Or is it gone because, like, you know, Wanda Maximoff style, someone went, no more religion, and, like, it just disappeared. And so people are like, they can remember it, but it's gone. Like,
right.
That's a weird place to be.
It is. All right, question number 5. What's your favorite quote?
My favorite quote is, there are two infinite things, the universe and human stupidity. And I'm not certain about the universe. Albert Einstein.
Albert Einstein.
Right on.
Mark Twain. We don't know.
No, that's fantastic.
That is a great quote.
If you want to answer our 5 questions, and I think we only have a couple left at this point.
We only
point.
Have 4 left.
Oh, my
so
God.
We could use some. Send your answers to 5questions@geekswithoutgod.com. And we will read them when we get to them, which will be sooner than you'd think. If you take a minute to check us out at Patreon, we're patreon.com/geekswithoutgod. If you support us, we give you stuff like stickers, buttons, episodes early. We often record 2 or 3 episodes at a time, and so you get them weeks or months early a lot of times, which is cool.
We are inching our way towards our first goal.
Yeah, we might be able to do some stuff with some of the money we've gotten so far, which is great. And we're working on some getting some new like button and sticker designs or something for our supporters or just for anyone interested that also is supporting us. You should find us on Facebook. We post stuff there about when new episodes go up or new Patreon episodes are uploaded and ready to go. Sometimes we say funny stuff on Twitter as Geeks Without God. And we're on Stitcher and iTunes, so if you could leave us a rating, that would be stellar. Otherwise, we'll be back next week with more.
Stuff.
Stuff.
Stuff. Improvise. Stuff. What's your show going to be next year?
Mansplaining the Musical.
My Medical History.
Shakespeare Through a Baby Monitor.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
I thought we were all gonna harmonize.